This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today my guest on Off the Shelf is Larry Allen. Larry is president of Allen Federal Business Partners and as a longtime practitioner of the, I don't know if you call it art, science, or, you know.
Definitely more art than science.
The government procurement world and, you know, how to go to market and just dealing with the federal customer on many different policy levels, business levels, all different levels. Right, Larry?
That's right, Roger. And thanks for having me on Off the Shelf. It's good to be back.
Larry, it's great to have you on. And it's it's kind of a role reversal. I've sat on the other side where you used to interview me for the show. So I'm glad I'm able to return the pleasure.
Be kind.
Of course. This is a friendly show. And I could just open up to where do you want to start, Larry? There's so many targets of opportunity in the procurement world right now.
There are so many things going on right now, Roger. Specifically, right now, the Federal Strategic Sourcing Initiative has hit its stride with GSA's recent award of the new OS3 office supply contracts. It's been talked about on this station and other places for the last week or so. But in terms of what strategic sourcing means, and this is kind of the hallmark of the strategic sourcing program. So I think that it bears some special looking into to see if this program is going to continue to have the traction in its third iteration that it had over the last 5 years, and just how well some of these newer businesses are going to be able to handle federal customer demands and needs.
Yeah, and you know, it's an interesting dynamic, and I don't, you know, it's to me sometimes the office supplies is almost like the canary in the coal mine, right?
I mean,
people are using that to model other things. And, you know, it's interesting to me that, you know, one of the things that that is a hallmark of this particular strategic sourcing initiative is that they decided to award separate IDIQ contracts for office supplies, not using the schedules as the platform for that. And I just wondered if you had any thoughts around that, whether you saw it as contract duplication, what does it mean for all those folks on the schedule or people who just want to sell in the open market?
All excellent points, Roger, and you raise a couple of really good questions there. First of all, GSA kind of, I think, unwittingly set this course of action in motion half a dozen years ago when they closed the 75 schedule to new offers. If they had it to do over again, I think they might rethink that decision. Because having to go to a non-schedule commercial item contract was a lot more work than if they had just continued to do blanket purchase agreements via the underlying schedule contracts. There was a lot of new vetting that you had to do for companies that were not on the schedule, some of whom ended up with an OS3 award. So we'll have to see how that plays itself out. More work for GSA, more work for the contractor, most of it unnecessary. So I think that we would have been better served with a schedules-based solution. GSA might have taken another tack and 2 years ago reopened the 75 schedule to new offers. And that way they would have had a good base of fresh faces to work with on the OS3 awards. We'll have to see what this means for 75 schedule contract holders. I mean, all the attention is on the office supply FSSI, but there remains significant companies on the 75 schedule, some of whom continue to do a reasonable amount of business, particularly some of the companies that were on OS2 and are not on OS3, at least not now, pending any protests. But they are on the schedule.
You have any doubt there'll be protests there, Larry?
No. I'm predicting that there certainly will be several. So, you know, if I was a non-awardee, I would go and look at my 75 schedule and still advertise the fact that companies can get to me through that schedule and still be assured of fair and reasonable pricing and good service.
Right. You know, it's interesting that one of the things that sort of struck me about the whole scenario with the Office Supply Strategic Sourcing is, to your point about, you know, the schedules, another thing that strikes me is that, you know, now you've created an IDIQ, almost a separate program that has a 5-year term, as I understand it. Maybe it's 10, but I don't think so. I think it's a 5-year term. And you've almost got to start planning the recompete right now, like the because they didn't do it in a timely manner this time. And what happened? They had the OS2 BPAs. They were ending. They had no, quote, strategic sourcing coverage. So they tried to extend the BPAs. They were unable to do so because people protested. So then they had a period where people were going back to the schedules before they put these in place. And that's a poster child for why you should have been using the schedules in the first place. You could have done it much quicker. You have them in place instead of doing a complex IDIQ contract that was separate and apart. You know, regardless of, you know, how it all, you know, we are where we are now. I think, you know, you would think that folks would think about that for future reference.
Well, hopefully they will at GSA think about that, Roger. And, you know, there's still nothing that prohibits them from reopening that 75 schedule today if they would like to rejuvenate it and receive new offers for it, so that, to your point, their acquisition planning is a little bit smoother next time than it has been this time. Unfortunately, you know, parts of the government, this is not just exclusive to GSA, don't always do that type of acquisition planning.
Right. Well, yes.
Surprise, 5 years is here a lot quicker than you thought it would be. But, you know, you raise an excellent point in terms of you're going to be in an almost continuous contract cycle, contract development, contract award, you know, on-ramps, off-ramps. How many people do you have in order to be able to hit all those milestones? The short answer is not enough. So it really kind of gets to how well are these contracts going to be managed. You've also switched tracks multiple times now on your customers in a very short period of time. And if you expect your customers to keep following you, you can't continue to switch up acquisition methods on them. You have to provide them with some constancy and things that they're familiar with. And one of the things, Roger, I'd be willing to bet if we had 10 customers in this room and we asked them, at least 8 of them would think that this OS3 is still schedules based.
Sure, sure. So what are you hearing out there with regard to, you know, how strategic sourcing is being viewed as its impact on the supply chain? You know, are there concerns about that sort of thing?
Well, there really are concerns. They transcend just this office supply area. It goes to furniture and IT and anything else that GSA buys through its commercial item contracts. And it has to do with the reason and the narrow definition, really, that GSA and OMB, to be fair, have given strategic sourcing. And what that really means is get it for less. And if you look in the commercial world, strategic sourcing encompasses a whole lot more than just that one end piece of it. There are a whole lot of things that go into a company's strategic sourcing decision other than the price at the end. Here, that is what strategic sourcing means to the government. So any quality contractor that I've been talking to looks and sees what's been happening with the FSSIs that have been put into place, and I don't think they want a part of it. Some of them are planning ways to sell around a contract if it comes to their area. Some might have a very limited presence with just, you know, a certain part of their product line on an FSSI. But they are, I think, correct in saying that if you adopt a one-size-fits-all strategy to strategic sourcing, you're going to successfully miss more and more customers because there's more to the acquisition cycle than just low cost.
Right. There's, you know, it's managing that relationship. It's delivering value for the customer. And, you know, an LPTA approach to, you know, this effort, you know, misses the importance of value and innovation. I mean, it's sort of an anti-innovation approach. And you know what, Larry, we're at the break. So when I come back, we'll talk more to Larry Allen. Larry is president of Allen Federal Business Partners, and we'll continue a little bit on strategic sourcing, but also just talk about the future of the GSA Multiple Award Schedule Program, challenges and opportunities. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
These days, it seems everyone's talking about the new normal, but federal agencies have a chance to define it. How will you shape your future? Turn to Deloitte. We understand what makes America work and how it can work better. With our private sector insight and public sector experience, we can help you rethink, reduce, and restructure, or even change the game. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Larry Allen. Larry is president of Allen Federal Business Partners. And Larry, when you took the break, we were, I guess, getting close to wrapping up our little discussion on strategic sourcing, but I know you had a couple other thoughts you wanted to share.
Well, Roger, I think the basic success of strategic sourcing as a program is predicated on the presumption that if GSA builds it, the customers will come. And as I was saying towards the end of that first segment, I'm not sure that that's a good presumption to have. If you're going to take a multifaceted approach to strategic sourcing so that you're doing different things in different product and service areas, that might be one thing to indicate success. But there hasn't really been anything that I've seen so far that indicates that strategic sourcing as the government currently envisions it is anything other than a single track device. And that has implications for strategic sourcing as well as for other things that GSA is doing.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting observation because, you know, one of the things when you start looking at some of those solicitations and when they have, you know, agency commitment letters, if you read those letters, it's fascinating stuff. They're conditional commitment letters and there's criteria that are laid out with regard to, you know, how the contract must meet the agency's needs or meet that criteria. That's conditional. Right. And I understand that. I mean, if I'm the buyer, I'm going to be, you know, I guess, show me how you're better serving me, right? Before I go use it. But at the same time, they also then, you know, put a dollar amount of how much they conditionally commit. And this is a kicker for me. It's like, So you have agencies that say, well, they conditionally commit $1 to $2 million of their annual spend. And then they'll also make clear that that GSA has documents that show their annual spend is $150 million. So they're, you know, less than 1% conditionally committing to using this vehicle. And for companies, I think that makes it an extremely difficult proposition to try to price and figure out what's going on, you know, in the market.
It makes it difficult for companies, both in terms of pricing, Roger, and the degree to which they actually want to try to pursue a strategic sourcing award. You know, for some, it's just not worth cheapening their brand, if you will, to do it. But it also, when you have those conditional letters from agencies, inherent in what we were just saying is that, look, GSA is building this and the agencies are telling them in writing, look, we're going to come, but we're not going to come all the way in. And we're only going to come sometimes.
Right.
We are going to do our own thing if we feel like that's in our best interest. You know, this is what I mean when I talk about, you know, you have to make sure that if you're going to build all these new procurement programs at GSA that the customers are going to actually want to use them. Things like the hallways program.
The common acquisition portal idea, right? We have different hallways for various commodities or categories from industry. Yeah. It's interesting because that's, one of the things that we talk a lot about is, there's to your point about multifaceted approaches. One of the things that sort of there's two things that in our view that get lost in this. Number one, agency specific BPAs based on real requirements.
Yes.
The agencies know what they buy. They have the money. They're the ones with the money. They know when they buy, their buying patterns, and it's a basic proposition that the closer the transaction is to the requirements holder, the more likely you're going to get a good outcome. So why OMB hasn't really promoted the idea of doing, agency-specific BPAs where real requirements and commitments can be articulated as a tool in the toolbox is beyond me. But then the other aspect of it is when they rewrote the FAR 8.4, they made it extremely hard to do single award BPAs. And it seems to me that one way the government could get a better deal is to be able to do a quick competition for a single award BPA for an estimated or set amount of requirements that, that the customer would buy or, commit to and the contractors would compete for. And you don't make them, evergreen in the sense they go on forever, but you put a time certain on it, so there's going to be another one. But that's an effective tool that's been taken out of the toolbox. I wonder what you think of that.
It's an effective tool, and I think that the indication of the rewrite, Roger, points up some inconsistency in the government's approach. And first of all, at its core, one of the things that strategic sourcing does is it limits the number of players. So instead of having 500 on a schedule, now we have, 21 new awardees, which is a very strong indication that the government thinks that, look, if we limit the pool to a select number of companies, we're really going to drive better pricing because not everybody gets in. Yet, if you have a specific requirement that a customer agency wants to do with one company via BPA, to your point, that's much more difficult now, which kind of begs the point, well, if reduced competition at the contract level is such a good thing
yeah.
Then why not, then what's wrong with having that? Wouldn't you use the same logic to say, if we want to do a single award BPA and somebody's going to be the winner take all, we're going to get a very good price as a customer agency.
Right.
And as you say, you have to be careful about how you manage that moving forward. But there's nothing inherently wrong with that tool.
Right.
Single award BPAs have been used for many years, and contractors understand what they have to do to get those awards. Again, they're not for everybody, but they are for some. And contractors work hard for those. Multiple award BPAs are a good tool as well, but contractors understand that when they're going to do a multiple award BPA that they have to still hold something back to get on that BPA because they're going to have to compete
for task orders. So single award BPAs that have a time certain so they can be recompeted, I mean, that blends both. You get a better price, but you still maintain openness to the market, to the MAS market. Right?
The only thing I can think, Roger, is that those are good contract methods, but they don't have the same visibility as a central strategic sourcing program. Mm. And, that does play well on Capitol Hill and elsewhere, that the government is out trying to save money. And this was part and parcel of the press release that GSA came out with for OS3, talking about $70, $75 million of saved costs by implementing these contracts.
I know they talked about the savings. That's a whole nother topic of discussion.
Right.
But I want to turn to the GSA schedules. And we got, the time flies. We got a couple minutes left in this segment, and that's a big topic. But I'll start by, what challenges are you see right now with the schedules or opportunities for the schedules?
Well, probably the biggest challenge I see to the schedules program, Roger, is the need for a strong schedules advocate inside GSA, somebody who can speak to the benefits of the program, tweak it where it's necessary, but who is a good apostle for the basics of the program, which have served the government's needs well for a very long time. Right now, it seems that every criticism, valid or otherwise, leveled by a customer agency is internalized inside GSA. Not to say that you need to be tone deaf to your customers. On the other hand, well, you've got a good program, a program that stood the test of time. That should tell you something. And if it's a matter of you being GSA, educating your customers on how what their flexibilities are, that's a good thing. It doesn't reflect an inherent weakness in the program itself.
Right. And, you know, to your point, it's still 30, you know, GSA still counts a $35 billion program on an annual basis. VA does another 10, or
right,
maybe a bit over $10 billion now. So it's $45 to $50 billion program still, despite, you know, the pot shots and the, you know, that people take at it. I mean, that demonstrates some resiliency, some strength, and some value for the customer. But on that note, we do have to take our next break, Larry. When we come back, we'll be talking more to Larry Allen, president of Allen Federal Business Partners, and we'll continue our discussion of the schedules a little bit and also talk about, you know, commercial item contracting, putting commercial back in commercial item contracting. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Larry Allen, president of Allen Federal Business Partners. Larry?
You got it.
I got it. You know, it's been a long day. But when we took the break, we had sort of started the discussion of the GSA Schedules Program, and, you know, I wanted to maybe focus on, you know, it is a valid program, but what do you see as some of the challenges? You mentioned tweaks maybe or that sort of thing. What do you, I know you were a member of the MAS panel back in 2010 approximately.
That's right, the Multiple Award Schedule Advisory Panel, which also featured as a member the current FAST Commissioner Tom Sharp. And we made a series of recommendations there, some of which GSA has taken up in terms of looking at the structure of the schedule, making sure that the type of labor categories on the services schedules make sense to have, trying to address some of the scope issues in the program. Those are issues that are still with us today. How do you best use those contracts? If you're going to be cutting across several different schedule platforms, also things that we've talked about several times, Roger, would how to better handle other direct costs, how to handle cost plus. If you've got a DOD customer who is your single largest customer agency, and they're telling you that they're no longer doing time and material labor hour contracts, which may or may not be true, then you know that if your schedules program, your $35 billion a year program, is going to continue to be viable with your number one customer, you have to develop something other than a firm fixed price solution that customer can use, thus the need for a cost plus type capability, even though that kind of would hybridize the schedules from commercial into government. You do what you need to do, to, at least to a certain extent, to try to still remain on your largest customer's radar screen and give them the solutions they need. And look, at the basic point, would DOD have to go out and recreate this program simply to have a cost-plus capability? How expensive would that be for that agency right now, particularly at a time when DOD does not have extra money to be investing in overhead. They're trying to get everything out. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense for GSA to adapt in that way. You know, one of the other things, while we need some tweaks to schedules program, Roger, you know, it is very popular in industry. It's very popular with customer agencies. The sales alone tell you that it continues to remain a popular, in some cases, priority vehicle for government agencies. So that should tell GSA that for all of the tweaks the program might need, they're inherently doing something right and providing something of good value. And that works when you have companies who are on the contract and GSA who manages the contract working together, because they do have a common customer. We're not trying, you know, it's not GSA and the customer or the contractor on the schedules who are trying to beat each other up. They both want to make sure they're delivering quality solutions to a federal customer. So that viewpoint, I think, needs to come into the equation a little bit more. How can we ensure that industry continues to support the program, can get on the program with innovative solutions so that it's not just popular now, but it will still be popular 10 years from now.
Sure. So it evolves, and it evolves with the commercial marketplace.
That's right.
Which is one thing I wanted to get your take on too. And, you know, one of the concerns that I hear voiced, you know, despite, you know, the program remains popular both within government and industry, but there are also concerns that, you know, the concept of commercial item contracting, and that's not just schedules, just across the board, I'd say, has sort of been, you know, lost in the shuffle or purposely pushed aside in the current environment. You have thoughts on that?
Certainly. To some extent, you know, people like you and I, Roger, who've been in this business for a long time, in my case, 25 years, you see cyclical things happening. And we're in a cycle right now where there are significant government-only requirements, even on commercial item contracts. We don't need to go into a lot of detail. We could do a whole show on how they got there.
No, sure.
But the fact is that there more and more restrictive terms have crept into the contract marketplace, especially for commercial items. That has the potential to discourage new market entries and also to push some companies to the sidelines, where maybe they're not selling direct to the government. Maybe they're going to be selling through specialized government resellers. So, you know, we talk a lot in acquisition broadly, especially on Capitol Hill. How do we make the government market more accessible? We have that discussion on a Tuesday morning, and then Wednesday morning, we vote for new laws to really sock it to the contractor.
Sure.
And then, mm-hmm. you know, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that you have specialized companies selling in the government market.
Right. And, you know, it's counterproductive. I mean, it's, and we do go through these cycles, right? And now we're still in the cycle of, you know, we've got to sock it to contractors, you know, whereas, you know, the oversight is, you know, the first priority. And I think that's just not a healthy long-term trend in terms of the value to customer agencies and ultimately meeting mission. I mean, you know, the government budget is, you know, procurement budget is getting smaller, right?
Yes.
This is true. I mean, it's still a big budget. It's a great business opportunity.
Yes.
But at the same time, that just tells you that you can't afford to shut out traditional commercial firms who want to engage in the federal market. So, I mean,
no, I think you really run the risk of substantially increasing your acquisition and program costs, Roger, if you, the government, start driving commercial companies out or make it difficult for new commercial companies whose technologies you want to take advantage of to come in. And I don't mean to pick just on Congress. You know, certainly we see a lot of regulations coming out of the FAR Council, out of the Office of Management and Budget, people who want to use the procurement system for socioeconomic goals, not just to conduct government acquisitions. And there certainly is a role for that in any public sector acquisition program, but it's always good to have a little bit of a reset, Roger. Right. A reset and go back and take a look at what you've put in and how that might be having an impact on innovative companies continuing to serve your market or even coming in and serving your market for the first time.
Yeah, and I think an area that's ripe for that too is intellectual property rights and making sure there's balance there. If you want innovation and ideas from the private sector, you've got to be a good partner in terms of protecting, acknowledging and protecting, you know, intellectual property rights.
You're exactly right. And this is an issue, I don't know, you might have a slightly different perspective, but from my perspective, Roger, in dealing with commercial item contracts, the whole issue of intellectual property rights used to never be a question. You're selling a commercial item, a commercial solution. It's your commercial technology that you developed. So why would the government have access to that or be able to limit your rights?
Or repurpose it.
Right, to sell it in the government marketplace. And now it is. And we could pick other things as well. Contract compliance supervision would be another one where the presumption going in is that industry is trying to put one over on the government and make a lot of money. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I could certainly live in a bigger house.
Right. Yeah. The compliance regime is a huge cost. And, you know, at some point you do, it's all a question of balance, right? It's when are the costs, when do the costs outweigh the benefits? That kind of equation that I think there needs to be a conversation about that. But right now we have to take our last break, Larry. My guest today is Larry Allen, president of Allen Federal Business Partners. And when we come back, Larry, we'll talk about, you know, going to market, some tips for success, and maybe a little bit about the Coalition for Government Procurement and its 35th anniversary. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Shouldn't a workstation live up to its billing? If yours are no longer working, there's Initiate from the Han Company. Initiate workstations are easy to order, install, and reconfigure. Components fit precisely and provide endless ways for space planners to arrange people. Initiate is also highly sustainable, helping reduce your environmental footprint. Initiate workstations, inspired by the practical needs of the workplace. Online at hon.com. That's HON.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Larry Allen, president of Allen Federal Business Partners. And Larry, I teased in the end of the last segment what we were going to talk about, at least at the beginning of this segment, and that is going to market, navigating this thing called the federal procurement marketplace, our federal marketplace. And I'm just going to turn it over to you. Can you give the listeners some tips, just thinking about how you do navigate the market successful, or things you need to think about or consider?
Certainly, Roger, and appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit about this, because there are some common things that a lot of companies get wrong, and there are a lot of things that some companies get right, and you can save yourself a lot of time and pain. Probably the most
significant pain.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Probably the largest problem I see with companies who are coming into this government market for the first time is that they try to look at the smorgasbord of contract and opportunities and say yes to all of them. What you really need is focus. Focus on those one or two offices that you work best with, or that you might have some comparable commercial market experience with. Maybe it's the office, federal office down the street that's in your community. Maybe it's not. But, you know, stay focused, establish your beachhead. Remember that not even a Lockheed Martin can be everywhere at once. So that's my first tip. Second tip is to have good channels of getting your product or service into the market. Some of that's having the right contracts, like a GSA schedule contract, but also if you're an IT company, you might want to look at things like a NASA SEWP contract.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Or the T4 at the VA. Remember, 50% of the government's IT budget is spent through standing indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contracts. So have good channels. Part of that's good contracts. Other is having good people who are experienced in selling to the federal market on your team, whether they're internal to your company or external. There's no substitute for experience. If you're trying to get in with good resellers and channel partners, so that's my second tip, is to, you know, be where your customer can find you. Third is that my mantra, probably very similar to yours, Roger, in government contracting, is it's not about how much money you make, it's about how much money you keep. Simply put, you want the government as a contractor to write you checks. You don't want to have to write checks back to the government. Keep an eye on contract compliance. There are stories on this radio station's website every day of the week about companies who don't do that and individuals who don't do that and pay a hefty price for that. I mentioned in the last segment, you know, we could all live in bigger houses. Well, sure, some of those bigger houses are occupied by government contract lawyers.
Right.
because there is a steady drumbeat of companies that don't do the communication internally necessary to ensure good compliance. So number three is comply with what you need to comply with. And if you don't understand it, don't assume you'll take care of it later. That's an indication to stop, get an answer, and develop a solution before you move ahead. It might take you a little bit longer to get into the market, but you'll be happy you built that infrastructure when you do.
Right. It's really about investing in that compliance plan and, you know, sort of infrastructure to ensure success. I mean, that's a foundational, right? Don't you think?
It is. You want to make sure that you've got that, because, you know, the government does have specialized rules, as we've been talking about today. But the other thing is, it's indicative of, is that you have to have both feet in the market. A lot of companies come in and put one foot in the market and one foot not in it. Well, you know, if you've got competitors who have both feet fully committed to the market, you're not going to be doing too well against them if you're only partially committed. So if you're going to go all in.
Right. And that's go all in on your business development.
Right.
And compliance, especially. I mean, that's vital. You know, from a small business perspective, I think, you know, with a couple of things, you know, they're mentioning the GSA schedules and, you know, and other, you know, IDIQ contracts. I think that's a key tool. I don't know what you think, but the fact that now you can set aside orders under schedules, you know, what are you seeing there?
Well, it is. It's a good compliance tool. The schedules, in my mind, have always been very small business friendly. So many of the great majority of companies on the schedule are small. The schedules routinely exceeds the government small business set-aside goal. And just a few years ago, they put in this capability where a customer agency may set aside a purchase for small firms. And I think that's really advantageous for the small businesses, but it's also potentially advantageous for the customer, because they could be those innovators that we're talking
sure.
about. The innovators that are coming in with a new way of looking at things. They're not jaded by years of experience with some government agencies. And those are the types of things that you really want to be able to avail yourself of, particularly if you've got a lot of procurement actions on your desk. Doing a set-aside can be a quick and easy way to get you something really nice.
Right, right. Well, and you know, now I want to turn to a little bit about the Coalition for Government Procurement. You were my predecessor, the president of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and you know, worked there like 15 years, I think, total.
I was at the Coalition for 20 years.
20 years, okay. 20 I'm years. Sorry. I'm sorry about that. But so, you know, I just wanted to give you a chance. This is the 35th anniversary, Larry,
yes.
of the Coalition for Government Procurement. So, you're there for, what is that? That's like, is that 60%? I can't do my math.
Well, that's why you and I went into procurement.
That's right, right, right. That's why I became a lawyer.
Paul Caggiano used to say, Paul was the founder of the Coalition, he used to say that, you know, Larry's been president of the Coalition for 12 good years, and then I would get up and say, well, I've actually been president for 15 years, but apparently three of those weren't so good.
Well, can you talk about, you know, the founding of the Coalition, the vision behind it, and, you know, And what you know, if you have some highlights or things that...
Sure. The coalition really was formed. It was formed in 1979 by a group of companies who felt like they weren't getting a fair deal when doing business with the government. And it was originally called the Coalition for Common Sense in Government Procurement. What I used to tell people when I was at the coalition, Roger, is right about the time I came there, they dropped the common sense. Whether or not that was causal, I don't know.
Cause and effect there, huh?
That's right. But it was formed by a small group, mostly small businesses, who felt like they weren't getting a good shake, a fair shake, when negotiating their GSA schedule contracts. They felt like they were being asked to do things that were unreasonable. And they wanted to make sure that they came together to drive better acquisition practices, make buying commercial items at the time more like selling them in the commercial market, at least as much as possible. Probably one of the earliest issues that the association got heavily involved in was on prompt payment, both in 1990 and again in 1992.
Huge issue for small businesses.
Right. There were two landmark pieces of legislation passed by Congress to ensure prompt payment for companies. And in the early days, when the association had maybe 25 member companies, you would get hundreds of people to come to a meeting to talk about prompt payment. So that was really a nice win. Opening up the schedules program to services was something the coalition had a real hand in, as well as in working with GSA on the original implementation of the industrial funding fee. As you can imagine, that was something that a lot of companies had questions about, and yet everybody kind of understood that this was what was necessary to fund the program. Congress was no longer going to appropriate dollars for it, so we needed the industrial funding fee, and that really was something that we worked with GSA on. Same thing with GSA Advantage, the online marketplace for schedule and other GSA items. We worked with GSA on that. I'm not sure that that was as smooth as the industrial funding decisions, but nevertheless, it was something that we were able to work with GSA on in order to have industry understand the benefit and to promote the benefit to our common customer agencies. So, you know, Paul Caggiano really did put the founding into it. I came in about 10 years later, and we grew the association up together, along with some help from other people. So where it became an association of over 350 companies from all walks of commercial service and product life. And I think it continues to be an extremely effective voice under your leadership, Roger.
Thank you, Larry.
For companies that are selling commercial services and products. You don't, while the IT industry might have some of its representatives and associations, there are an awful lot of industry segments the coalition serves that do not. And that was really one of the reasons, again, why the association was founded. You would go and talk to one of the large national associations of procurement. We don't have the time or the interest to deal in procurement. If you guys are going to do that, great. We're going to recommend that our members join the coalition. So
sure.
That was another genesis, and it's still a good reason to come in today.
Right. Well, thank you, Larry. And you know, I want to thank Paul Caggiano, the vision behind the coalition, and the founder really working with those original companies, and for all that he has done and continues to do to support common sense in government procurement. I want to thank you, Larry, for all your efforts over, I would say, 15 good years, right? supporting coalition and common sense procurement. And, the success of coalition has is built on the foundation that Paul and you built with the coalition and with your efforts to work with government for, for better procurement outcomes for all and for the taxpayer. So I want to thank you guys both personally for all that you've done for the procurement community and for the Coalition for Government Procurement. And, I've got to finish real quick, just to mention our golf tournament, August 27th, the Coalition, in honor of the 35th anniversary, is establishing a scholarship fellowship at the George Washington University for a deserving veteran who is either enrolled in law school or in their master's in government procurement program. And I know, Larry, I want to thank you for sponsoring a hole and participating in the event. We look forward to seeing you out there on Wednesday, August 27th.
I look forward to winning good stuff.
Okay, well, I hope you win some good stuff, Larry. And with that, again, I want to thank my guest, Larry Allen, president of Allen Federal Business Partners, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.